Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Fold it over that way.
Right.
Fold it over like the long, yeah, it's the up and down way. It's not a cross. I can't explain it completely, but you are eating it from the smaller end up, and that's how you fold it over. Am I right with this, Nigel? Am I right explaining it that way?
100%.
The triangular end. It's always, you always eat the smaller end up.
That goes
anybody
first,
yeah. Who takes a bite out of the larger end needs to go to prison. No, it's just not good.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Indeed, we got a few emails about how to eat pizza, which are referred to as New York-style pizza, which always makes me laugh because it's actually pizza. I have a couple of emails I wanted to read from Mike in Burke, Virginia. As we shared the tube socks magic, I was also heartened to hear of your occasional affection for Taco Bell. I'm also a couple of times a year maybe Taco Bell guy, but my kryptonite is the chicken quesadilla, in which they place, along with chicken and melted cheese, don't you know, a creamy spicy sauce, which if I had the chance, I would cheerfully inject right into my veins. That's how good it is, and that's why I have it so seldom. However, the odds are very strong that anything from Pizza Hut is swill. And a haiku from Shad for hurricanes, Laura and Marco, spinning in the Gulf. First comes rain, then Cantori, which leads me into something that I wanted to say today. We finally got the dog in from outside. Michael is set up 6 feet across from me on Uncle Benny's table.
Dreaming of Taco Bell.
Dreaming of Taco Bell, which we all do. And then what is that? What is the papadilla that
we're going to talk
about that later?
What's so great
is
as you hear the open every day, you nod in agreement with yourself as you're weighing each and every one of your assertions.
We will talk
about the proper way to triangulate pizza.
We had a lot of email about the papadilla, and we will get to that. So there are hurricanes, at least one hurricane. Laura is at least one hurricane at this point. And if you watched, as I did the Today program earlier this morning, where they led with the hurricane and with Al Roker, you saw that it is now considered likely that it would be a hurricane of category 4 strength, which is really large, or as Kevin would say, a hurricane, and it's going to slam into
tough first
between Texas and Louisiana, not New Orleans. It's going to be west of New Orleans. Then it's going to continue with a storm surge that, the way Al Roker described it, was going to literally destroy houses 50 miles up the road where there is no water. That's what the storm surge would do, and eventually wend its way, apparently, here in Washington, D.C. When I say here, I refer to Washington, D.C. You're somewhere else, obviously, by Saturday. So with this in mind, and with the understanding that that is a significant and serious and perhaps, hopefully not, deadly situation for people, I am going to segue into my own life and the really small nonsense of my own life with rain. The other day there were, so yesterday was Tuesday. On Monday, there were some thunderstorms in the area where I live. They did not land on me, in the area where I live, so close that Carol had gone to the refugee Safeway and reported that when she got out of the refugee Safeway, there was a deluge of rain. I am less than 1 mile from the refugee Safeway. We did not have a drop at my house.
Microclimates.
What does that mean?
Microclimates. This is what you used to see when you'd visit your dad down in Florida, where block to block,
on one side of the road, it would rain. I just assumed that was in Florida and not anywhere else. So yesterday, as we're walking the dog at about between 6 and 7 at night, you can hear thunder above us where we live. You can hear the thunder. You can look at the clouds. I would not say it was ominous. I know the difference between ominous and just getting scary. And it was in the getting scary phase. And later in the evening, at around the 4th or 5th inning, the Nats they have to put the tarp on
after
the field.
After the 5th. Okay. Umps wanted it to be official.
Right. They have to put the tarp on the field, even though they know it's going to go through.
Right.
But now it's pouring there. I look at it. Now, we all spend a little bit too much time on our phones. I know I spend a little bit too much time on my phone. I no longer talk to anyone who lives with me in my house because they're on their phones 15 hours a day and they're not paying attention to anything else. And I suspect this is the way that life is all over the world. that you have your phone and you retreat into the cocoon of your phone, and that's what happens. I don't like this way of living, but I have learned to use a few of the apps on my phone, just a few, and I have far too many. I don't want them. Every time my phone is reset, I get more of these stupid things.
Now, are these pay-for apps? Or
no, these are weather apps. The only apps I care about are weather apps.
But you can, they ask you to upgrade.
I have the Weather Channel. I have AccuWeather. I have regular weather, and I have radar. Radar is what I go to when I think it's going to rain shortly upon me, which is exactly what I thought. The radar last night from the 6:45 to 9:00 at night, that's a significant portion of time, from 6:45 to 9:00 at night. The radar, which is set for exactly where I live.
Blue dot.
Yeah. Showed that all around me and on me was not just a series of green, but green and a series of yellow. That's yellow is significant rain, right? Green, yes. All over my street. There's no doubt about this, because the entire screen was green and yellow, and it was on me, Northwest Washington, D.C., on me. Not a drop of rain at my house. Not one drop. Did you get rain last night?
I did. And
you
so
live about
us,
5 miles away?
Right, but we tend to get the storms from either Virginia side or the Montgomery County side. You normally get the Montgomery County side. So I always look at the baseball game. We either get it 10 minutes before or 10 minutes after they put the tarp down. But what you're asking about is, did you look at the timestamp? The only thing I can think of is...
What does that mean?
When you're looking at your radar, a lot of time it says, here's where it's been, here's where it's going.
It got us all the way through to the time that was current. And it was green and yellow all over the area. And we did not... We had some breeze, some wind knocked over a tomato plant. We had not a drop of rain. Nigel, did you have rain last night? You
we
live
did.
Near Michael.
Yeah.
What do I do about that in terms of my faith in radar?
Well, do you remember?
What do I do?
Do you remember when we played golf with Kip 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
We get to the 10th hole.
Yes.
Walking up the 9th fairway. So it doesn't look good right now. I mean, it had that seek shelter kind of feel. The air starts to shift. Gray skies. 10th hour, he goes, no, this is just outside of us. It's going to, you know, it's going to wrap around. It's going to skirt to the northwest corner as it chases up I-80.
Yeah.
We go down the 10th fairway. It's a heavy rain on us. He goes, no, look at the radar. Look at the radar.
We're on us.
It's
on
raining.
Us. I have less faith in the radar now than I did a week ago. This is twice that this has happened to me in the last 2 days, where this allegedly photographic evidence of what is happening to me is not happening to me, not on my street, my lovely repaved street. No, I didn't have it. And I don't know what to do with that. You know, I don't know how to feel about that. It just seems odd to me. It shows the rain coming down.
It would not feel that
not
bad
just green,
if
yellow.
It was just your zip code or the general area, but it knows exactly where you are. It's
supposedly
looking at your house.
One other thing, well, a couple of other things, but one other thing. I awakened to find that Lucas Giolito had thrown a no-hitter.
13 Ks?
13 Ks for Lucas Giolito as the Nats fell behind 3-0 in the first inning. Like, I got to the game in the third inning, it was 4-1.
I think that was the second or third
inning.
Okay,
so, I mean, they were, like, out of it right away.
It was 4-1 after the Real Muto three-run bomb.
All we know is that anytime Fetty or Voth is on the mound, the Nats are behind. They're struggling.
They're behind in the count from the start.
Yeah. So then I awakened to find out that Lucas Giolito has thrown a no-hitter for the Chicago White Sox. Jeff Passan will be on later. We will undoubtedly ask about that. But my feeling about this is an odd situation for me. Lucas Giolito was traded away. He was a great prospect, an L.A. kid, was traded away to the Chicago White Sox. And part of that deal brought Adam Eaton to the Nats. And Adam Eaton's been a terrific player. And Adam Eaton was a key member of a team that won the World Series. I don't want to give that back on any level. And I'm not saying that that's a bad trade, although I am saying that's a bad trade.
Right now, it feels
today, this morning, when
sad.
The Nats have no starting pitching that's dependable, really, and you see Lucas Giolito, who was the number one prospect they had as a starting pitcher.
Felt like a can't miss.
Yeah.
And then when you put him in, missed badly. And then went to Chicago and started to progress. I mean, last year he was...
Sure could use him now.
Yeah.
Sure could use him now, and that's the feeling.
Tied to Eaton Moore when you think about that Real Muto home run, which just goes over the very short head of Adam Eaton.
Adam Eaton's about 5'8". On the other hand, there's a play last night that Victor Robles makes where he doubles up a runner at first, just guns it from the deepest part of center field to first. It's
a great play. And it's the way he readjusts as he's great chasing play. The ball down to recognize that it's tailing back to center. I mean, he's like a safety hawking balls out there.
But the Nats are no good. The good news in my neighborhood, and I don't know what to make of this, and I don't know if it's a full schedule, but it appears to be at least a partial schedule. There are buses in my neighborhood again. There has not been a bus in my neighborhood since March. And Michael and I saw a bus the other day, and I just wondered if that was a one-shot and somewhat experimental. And I was out with Chessy this morning, and the bus went by, and I waved to the bus driver and gave him the thumbs-up sign because I was so happy because there's no bus. Now, there was nobody in the bus but him because you get conditioned to not having buses. You don't know what's going on. I assume this has something to do with the possible reopening of schools and the notion that we are going to get back to some normal life, which is insane because every time people do this, there's a spike in the coronavirus cases. And now there is evidence that 6 feet apart is not even enough. So we live in this strange duality where everything, where people think, oh, my life is getting back to normal and I don't have the virus, but all around me, everyone does. Well, that means you will too.
Well, are you familiar with Gatorgate?
No, is that the University of Florida?
No, Duke came out with a study where they looked at the neck gaiters that have been popular with a lot of the runners. And normally people wear it. They just pull it up over their
mouth. No, they don't. They just wear it like a scarf.
Right. So it is essentially a scarf. And when it's single ply, they came out with like, sometimes this is worse than wearing nothing at all.
Really? Why?
Probably because since it feels breathable to those runners and those outside, it's letting everything pass through. There was then some pushback on that. And if you doubled up the gaiter, but I was surprised with this because I actually have had buses in our neighborhood, and we're closer to Wisconsin Avenue. So you see, like I see the Georgetown University buses going up and down, but the look on your face, it was like...
So happy.
It was like you saw an airplane for the first
time. So happy to see a bus just go down the avenue and wave to the bus driver, and they wave back. It's happened twice. Made me very happy. We will take a break. We will come back with Brian Windhorst, and we'll talk about what the NBA faces in the bubble and what they face perhaps from protests as well. When we return, I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here's the thing about home security companies. Most trap you with high prices, tricky contracts, and lousy customer support. Their words, not mine. So while there are a lot of options out there, there's only one no-brainer, SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe's got everything you need to protect your home with none of the drawbacks of traditional home security. It's got an arsenal of sensors and cameras to blanket every room, window, and door tailored specifically for your home. We put that in the studio. If we ever get back to the studio, we'll have photographic evidence of everybody
poisoning the water. It's been running every day since.
Yeah. Professional monitoring keeps watch day and night, ready to send police, fire, and medical professionals if there's an emergency. You can set it up yourself in under an hour. Just peel and stick the sensors exactly where you need them. There is no technician required. There's no contract, no pushy sales guys, no hidden fees, no fine print. All this starts at $15 a month. And here's the sentence that actually does impress me the most. I'm not the only one who thinks SimpliSafe is great. U.S. News and World Report, which I had parenthetically as a quality organization, named it the best overall home security of 2020. So try SimpliSafe today at simplisafe.com/Tony. That simply is spelled S-I-M-P-L-I in this particular case, by the way, boys and girls. You will get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. There's nothing to lose. That is simplisafe.com/Tony.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a song called Jumping Out of Planes Without Parachutes. It is sent to us by David Thibodeau, who writes, "Dear craziest old grandpa, please find the enclosed music composed by my first child, a masculine child. Zane is 17, about to enter his senior year of remote learning at Westmont High School in Westmont, Illinois. Zane, the woman to whom I'm related by marriage, and our second child, a feminine child, reside in Clarendon Hills, Illinois. It's a delightful place to live and shop, or so the sign says. I just live here. Zane enjoys music, would like to have a career doing just that, as he saves up his money that he's making from his job at a local grocery store to purchase a new laptop so he can compose more frequently and with better quality. He's been laying down instrumental tracks using his phone. His phone! Emphasis by David. I'm very proud of his effort, and as a loyal little, it would mean the world to me if I could win my son's affection by coercing you to play his songs. on your reputable podcast. I do have his permission to send these in, so maybe I don't have too far to go. You don't. Jumping Out of Planes Without Parachutes by Zane Thibodeau. And plays in Brian Windhorst. And we depend on Brian because we think Brian is great. And if Brian is great, we don't have to be great, which is pretty much the story of my life. Don't have to be great. So yesterday, Brian, when we're doing the PTI show, right before the PTI show, there is a bunch of sports news having to do with the reaction to the shooting of Jacob Blake that everyone in America has seen 400 times at this point. And there is articulated by Fred VanVleet, who is a very good player on the world champion Toronto Raptors, the notion that, you know, we kneel down, it doesn't seem to do anything. We protest, it doesn't seem to do anything. Maybe we've got to put it on the line. Maybe we've got to do something more. And I don't know if this is said or unsaid, but the something more we all think about is the boycotting of games that players or whole teams or an entire league might say, you know what, we're not doing this. We're not playing anymore. We're done. How serious do you think this threat of not playing is?
I think it depends on who you talk to. I think there's still hundreds of players there, and different players feel strongly about different things. You know, I think Doc Rivers last night after the Clippers game was incredibly emotional and eloquent about his feelings on it. And then said he absolutely would not boycott because he doesn't believe that would accomplish what you're looking for, but then said he would support the players if they decided to. I think, Tony, the players are in a challenging position, and because they're obviously viscerally reacting to the things that they are seeing, and they feel helpless. And part of the reason they feel helpless is because of the situation they're in, the country is in. Part of the reason they feel helpless is because they're in this bubble, which is getting to all of them at this point. And part of the reason they feel helpless is that they sit in front of the media every single day. So while it is a it is an opportunity to speak on this, it also becomes a burden because they now are expected to be the voice of a culture, the voice of a race at many times, you know. You know, there are many people out there who have visceral reactions to the situation who don't have to sit in front of cameras every day. And that's so right. Part of the reason I think that they feel a little helpless is that so many people are looking to them and their hands are tied by just the limitations of, you know, humanity. And so just having to sit, you know, this is one of the things I talked about. What happened with has happened with the NBA and China, you know, many companies have complicated situations with China, and the NBA's is complicated, and I'm not smart enough to be able to articulate it. But the CEO of Apple and the CEO of Marriott and the CEO of the company that makes widgets doesn't have to sit in front of millions of eyeballs every single day and answer questions on it. Because the nature of the media attention is both a blessing and a curse. And that's part of what so many people are working through right now.
So I mentioned Fred VanVleet because he was, you know, vocal about it. George Hill has been vocal about it. I've just seen what they've had to say. I haven't seen anybody else. The question, the overall question I have is, who would be a leader in this? To me, LeBron James is always the leader because he's the best player and he's got the most accomplishments in basketball and he's an older person relative to basketball. But do you, you know, I know that Kyrie Irving wants to be a leader, but he's not in the bubble. Do you have any sense as to who you would listen to most who might be leading the players?
Right. Well, if LeBron called for this, I think there would be a possibility that would happen. You know, the thing about Kyrie, in the bubble or not, Kyrie is thoughtful, but he isn't. You know, and Dwight Howard was the same sort of profile. Both were thoughtful on this matter. You know, 2 months ago or whatever it was.
Right.
But neither one of them, frankly speaking, just frankly, neither of them are leaders of other players.
Right.
LeBron James fits that bill. And LeBron, from the start of this, has favored playing. And, you know, I think, you know, Doc Rivers compared it last night to what happened with Donald Sterling. And back when it was actually during the playoffs when that happened, and whatever year that was, 2013, I believe. And he discussed, you know, the reasons why he supported playing, and his feelings are the same. So, like I said, you've got several hundred players still there, Tony. I think you could get several different hundred opinions on it. I would say this. The situation is very fragile. And I think right now that the games will go on, but this is the morning. This is not the afternoon. And there's no other video that has hit on social media that could potentially change everything. So things are very fragile, as you can imagine right now.
What role would Michelle Roberts, who's the head of the Players Association, and Adam Silver, who's the commissioner of the league, what role would they play? Or would they just sort of have to sit back and let the steamroller go over them?
I mean, I think if you've watched how the league has handled this entire situation, they have offered pretty significant support. You know, yep. Maybe it hasn't satisfied everybody, but the measures that they have taken, the listening that they have done, the actions that the owners have taken, you know, I believe the owners have announced they're going to give hundreds of millions away to social justice initiatives over the next 10 years. Obviously, everything with the messaging that has been made available to the players there. I think just yesterday, the owner of the Brooklyn Nets, Joseph Tsai, announced a $50 million donation to social justice causes. I know it's not all about money, but, you know, I think the NBA is, you know, Adam Silver being the face of it, has been as supportive as it can, as it knows how to be. And I'm not sure that more money is going to make a difference. The platform is as big as it already is. So that's what I'm saying. Like, here we have an atrocity that happened, and it's being, because the NBA players and Adam Silver are so high profile, it's like, turn to them. Well, what are you going to do about it? You know, and
yeah.
It's like, well, you know, Adam Silver can't become the police commissioner of Kenosha, Wisconsin. You know, there's only so much that they can do. And I understand that there's a helplessness to it, and it's a helplessness of the entire situation. And that's the pressure, the attention. And the reason the attention is there is because the players have wanted the attention. They have called for the attention. But that attention now creates this expectation, and we have a situation that's compounding on top of it. And so it's really just a mess. The best thing for everybody would be for things to start going better in this country. And I don't know if that's feasible. I don't know if that's an expectation we can have.
All right, I'm going to turn to basketball itself now and ask the two obvious questions. Are the Lakers now safe, and are the Clippers now safe to move on in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think they're safe to move on from this round. I mean, the Blazers were a terrible matchup for the Lakers. Other way around. The Lakers are a terrible matchup right. for the Blazers. They have no method of handling LeBron and Anthony Davis. Now, that's obvious. Most teams don't. But they are particularly weak at the forward spots. And, you know, their only hope was for Dame Lillard to just come out and assault the Lakers with offense and continue to average 50 points a game and for the Lakers to continue struggling. That just did not happen. The amazing moment of game one, the Blazers are starting an undrafted rookie, a young man named Wenyen Gabriel. They put the mic on him in game one, Tony, because of course he's taking the mic. He'll never have the mic again in his career. And he's so excited about this moment that he goes over to the official and says, "I'm making my first NBA start." Because he has nobody else to tell, you know, and he gets a bloody nose in the first quarter, and the trainer goes over and they play this on TNT, and he goes, "I've never had a bloody nose before." That was the guy they had assigned to Anthony Davis.
Yeah,
okay?
I can't do that.
and they won that game. So it took a minute for the Lakers to get their feet on the ground, but Portland was only a speed bump. It just was a matter of how big of a speed bump was going to be. And now that Dame is out, I expect it to be a bludgeoning. The Clippers, you know, the Clippers have been, in my mind, a team that has been waiting 13 months to play meaningful games because they did the trades with for George and the signing of Kawhi in July of 2019. It has now been over 13 months since that happened, and they have not played a meaningful game until last night. And they had to wait through all of this injuries and load management and the pandemic and strip club chicken wings and all of these things. And they finally were told, hey, are you a championship contender or not? And they won by 40. Now,
yeah, they killed
them. Is that going to be carrying over for the next 4 weeks? I don't know. I can't see the future, but I think the Clippers' teeth is really significant.
Okay. All right. Yesterday on PTI, we were asked to do this question for SportsCenter, which is the best job opening in the NBA? And I'm going to put this to you. There's the Pelicans, the Bulls. Even Wilbon agreed the Bulls, nobody cares. The Pelicans, the Nets, the Bulls, the Sixers. And Wilbon went right to, well, if Greg Popovich is coaching, and I said, whoa. I don't know that we can just make that assumption that Greg Popovich is going to leave San Antonio and be open to a new job. So I'm going to ask you two parts of this. One, is Greg Popovich going to leave San Antonio and be open to a new job? And two, of those teams, which is the best job?
Yeah, it's a great question, Tony. It is a great question. Because probably the best job, to me, when I look at opportunities in the NBA, my first question, and I realize that this is not the case for many people. They don't look at it this way. My first question is ownership.
Yep.
Because ownership is the hidden, or shouldn't say hidden, it is the undersold most important thing for a franchise. Because your owner, and it's not 100% always true, because different owners have different profiles, but if your owner is someone that is positive to work for, then you have a much better chance to be successful. And there's all kinds of shades of gray in this. Now, the Brooklyn situation is fascinating because the level of talent that they have there the level of, it's a huge market and, it's a low bar. You're going to get this massive influx of talent and, you're going to have to improve on the seventh seed, and you have an owner who, so far, he's the newest NBA owner, but so far seems to be a good guy to work for, who's extremely wealthy. We're headed into a time in the NBA where a lot of teams are going to be facing cutting and taking talent off rosters. I don't think that's going to happen in Brooklyn. The man just liquidated $3 billion in stock just for the heck of it, as far as I can tell. Josai, I think that is a compelling job. That said, coaching Kyrie Irving can be difficult, but I think that is a hell of a job. When I look at New Orleans, that is a worrisome situation for me because, I think, Zion is a fragile state right now, and you are going to be expected to have, that team, into the playoffs and pushing very hard, very fast. And I don't know what kind of condition Zion is in. And then in Philly, you have a roster that is completely lopsided right now and needs a pretty significant overhaul. So I guess I would put the Nets first, but it's a heck of a conversation.
Popovich, you think that's possible, unlikely?
Here's one thing I can say. I mean, I have not talked to Greg Popovich in months personally. I cannot believe that he would coach anywhere besides San Antonio. I just could never see that. But I guess I can't rule it out. I just can't see it. The fact that, Sean Marks, who's a Spurs disciple, is there in Brooklyn and all of those advantages are there, and it's an incredible city. If Popovich wanted to do it, the Spurs would not stand in his way. They would almost certainly let him go. But you're asking if, Tom Landry would go, coach the 49ers. I could never see it.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Wilbon just puts it in play just to be provocative because I don't see that at all. But it always, everything comes down to Kyrie Irving. If you have to coach him, you ask Brad Stevens, does he want to coach him? You ask anybody who's ever coached him, do you want to coach this guy again? And they'll say no, won't they? They'll say no.
Well, I think here's the thing. I think both Kyrie and Kevin are incredibly talented, but their personalities are going to make it difficult. I understand. You know, here's one thing I just don't understand. Last summer, Kevin Durant had an opportunity to link up with three or four different superstars, and I have to say that I'm surprised that his decision was to link up with Kyrie. You know, Kawhi was interested in playing with him with the Clippers. Or he could have stayed put there. I understand that was problematic, but he could have stayed put. He could have gone to a place like Boston. You know, that would have been a fascinating thing. Him choosing Brooklyn over the Knicks, that I kind of understand. It was mind-boggling for the Knicks, but I understand that. Like I said, I think Brooklyn as an organization is a place where you'd want to be. You know, I think if you were picking owners, you would pick Joe Tsai over James Dolan from what we know at this moment. So picking Brooklyn was fine. It was the decision, the marriage that he chose to get into that was a little bit unusual. And it was Kyrie who basically sold him on it. You know, Kyrie recruited him and said, let's do this together. And I thought that was a heck of a gutsy move considering Kyrie's history, considering that Kyrie went sideways with LeBron James, who Durant not only is close to, but I would say borderline idolizes, certainly wants to mimic in many, many ways. You know, he went sideways with him. His situation in Boston went sideways with almost all of his teammates, essentially. It was a strange decision for Kevin Durant, in my view, to go into that marriage. And so we'll see where it goes. I'm skeptical that it will work because of the past results, but I guess I will sit here and watch it, and I'll tell you one thing. There's going to be rough patches, and the coach, whoever is that coach, is going to have a lot of stress on him, and I'm not sure that that's the temperament that Pop is looking for, but I guess stranger things have happened in pro sports.
Thank you, Brian. It's always a pleasure. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tony. Have a good day.
Brian Windhorst is fabulous. We will take a break. When we come back, Jeff Passan will join us. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
So this is the Indochino ad, and I'm going to get out of the way and let Nigel just talk about his experience. I will say this, that now that I've lost all this weight and none of my clothes fit, I'm actually considering getting one of these suits. I mean, I don't know how to measure myself or anything like that. I don't really want to go anywhere to get measured. But I'm considering getting one of these suits at the current, you know, my current body shape. And you've done this a few times. Why don't you talk about it?
Sure. Well, I can come by your place with my piece of rope and my yardstick to measure you.
Don't want that.
That's how I did it. It fit, and now my suits fit me like a glove. I've got three Indochino suits. Not only do they look great, you can design them the way you want, the lapels, the cuffs, if you want a monogram, however you want it, they'll let you do it the way you want to do it. And it doesn't cost a lot. It's a fantastic deal, and you look great. So people, if you want to look great, go to Indochino.
With Indochino, you get custom fitted suits, coats, and casual wear at surprisingly affordable prices. You can customize everything, from the fabric and the lining to the lapel shape and the monogram, as Nigel said. And since your order is made to your exact measurements, it always fits you perfectly. It fits you perfectly then, but don't gain weight or lose weight and expect it to stretch. Right. Just don't do that. If you're getting married, Indochino is a no-brainer for you and your groomsmen. Forget off-the-rack suits that don't fit different body types. Indochino gives everyone a tailored fit. Order with ease, get it shipped fast, no matter where you live. And with all the ways to customize, you can add a personal touch everyone will be proud to wear without emptying their pockets. The best part, Indochino suits start at just $299 with all customizations included. I don't want to get 1%er on people out here, but but believe me when I tell you that for something that fits you well and you like, $299 is a remarkable bargain. Visit one of the Indochino showrooms across North America or book a virtual appointment and shop online at Indochino.com, I-N-D-O-C-H-I-N-O, Indochino.com. And right now you will get $30 off any purchase of $399 or more when you enter the code Tony K at checkout. That's Indochino.com, promo code Tony K. And what do we always say? Use the code, people.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is our friend Dan Byrne. This is a song called Ticket Out from his just-released country-tinged album, Ivan's Barbershop. It's a song about a great high jumper who fails to deliver at the state meet. Kind of a universal tale. Dan Byrne's famous.
Yeah.
You know, Dan Byrne likes this show, and Dan Byrne is famous.
I hear his voice all day long when we watch Stinky and Dirty.
It's just wonderful. We're so happy for Dan Byrne. And he plays in Jeff Passan, and Jeff connected to Bluetooth during the break, which made us all very, very excited. We're happy about that.
Nervous.
I opened the show with a lament as a Nats fan about Lucas Giolito throwing a no-hitter last night, even though, you know, that look, the trade obviously worked out. Adam Eaton, you know, was starting right fielder on a World Series championship team, but the Nats have no starting pitching now. So what this leads me into a couple of early questions about starting pitching having to do with the Cleveland Indians. Mike Clevinger is back on the big club. Plesac is not. They told him to cool his heels for a little while longer or for the rest of his life. What do you make of this whole thing and the authority of Terry Francona in Cleveland?
If I may just diverge from that question for one second, because the Giolito point you brought up there is a great one. I was having this exact conversation with somebody last night because it is trade deadline week, Tony. And there are rumblings right now that I got late last night about a very interesting name I had not heard about that might be being discussed. And the person who asked or told this to me said, hey, you see what Giolito did tonight? Would you, in hindsight, have made that trade? And I thought, hell yes, I would make that trade.
It's a World Series trade.
If you win a ring, the trade was worth it.
Yep.
I don't care if you traded God himself for the ball boy. You got a ring, then you've won. And that's what Mike Rizzo did. And he's been very aggressive in trading his prospects. So, sorry, back to your original question.
Well, let me just amplify that for a second. The only regret is because I look at Fetty and I look at Voth and I look at what's happened to the aging warrior god Max Scherzer, and the fact that, you know, the other guys got carpal tunnel and is out for the whole year. So you look at the starting pitching, which was their strength, and you muse about Lucas Giolito. But yes, you got a World Series. Yes, of course you do it. Yes.
And let me just say this about Lucas Giolito. I was last night I was going back and looking at video of him when he was on the Nationals, because I don't know if you remember this, but Lucas Giolito's best pitch coming up was a curveball, which he does not throw anymore. And he doesn't throw it anymore because what Lucas Giolito did 2 years ago after he was arguably the worst pitcher in baseball is completely remake himself. And I don't know that this story gets told enough, you know, especially in baseball where mechanics are just considered such a pedantic, boring thing that nobody really bothers with them. But what Lucas Giolito did was akin to what Tiger Woods did in rebuilding his swing. He looks nothing like the pitcher he did a couple years ago. And when someone does something like that to me, it is a testament to work and to perseverance and to awareness of self and knowledge of your frailty and your ability to fail, where you say, I can't do it like this, so I have to do it another way, which to me makes what he did last night even more special.
It's a big deal. He's a big deal. All right, let me get you back to Clevinger and Plesac and Terry Francona.
So the Indian situation is really interesting because you talk with opposing general managers and they believe that Mike Clevinger is available right now via trade. And it makes me almost wonder if he is up with the Indians right now as a showcase.
Showcase. Yeah. Sure. I agree.
You get him out there, you say, hey, this guy was a total knucklehead, but remember he can do this. And he goes out there and he, you know, throws 7 innings of shutout baseball tonight. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, well, we've looked past bad behavior from people in the past. Why would it be any different now? Now, this runs the risk of doing two things. Number one, the players in the clubhouse, Tony, are not ready to bring him back. And I don't know that Terry Francona, who's out right now, and Chris Antonetti, the team president, would have done that without the blessing of the leaders on the team. But let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. The meeting that they had a couple weeks ago now, where Clevinger and Plesac tried to go to Detroit and explain themselves to the players, did not go well. Did not go well at all. It wasn't just Oliver Perez, Tony, saying that he was going to quit if those guys were around on the team. There were almost fights. There was yelling. There was screaming. There was MFing up and down. I mean, this, you know, you hear about team meetings. This is one of the most heated team meetings I have ever heard about. And so the notion that Clevinger is going to be welcomed with open arms back into the clubhouse just is not realistic.
Yeah, the notion also that his nickname is Sunshine. He's not bringing that much sunshine into that clubhouse. He's not. Let me get to all of this. The overarching thing about baseball, they're still playing. Yep. 3 or 4 different teams have had either full outbreaks or minor scares, and they're still playing. Are you surprised they continue to play?
I am not surprised anymore. When the Marlins outbreak happened, and remember, it seems like forever ago now, but it was really just after the first weekend of the season. When the Marlins outbreak happened, both I and I think the majority of people around the sport sat there and thought, what are they doing? Are they really going to try and soldier through this? I mean, we're talking, you know, as that week, Tony, went on, in the number kept climbing. I remember Jesse Rogers and I reported the big jump when there were 9 extra cases. And as I hit send on that tweet, I thought to myself, this is going to kill the baseball season. And lo and behold, not only did it not kill it, in an odd way, it made it stronger. Because at that point, that was where they made the decision, Tony, that we are going to go through this. We are going to fight through this. We are going to soldier through this. And I don't know at this point what it would take to shut Major League Baseball down. I think they are pot committed, Tony.
Yeah,
I
agree with that.
All in at this point. And, but, you know, they have said, we're going to make it to the playoffs, and I believe they're going to bubble the playoffs, and they're going to crown a champion this year.
I was going to ask you, will they bubble for the playoffs, because it's worked on hockey and basketball, so I don't have to ask that. But I will ask the sort of larger question here, the question of fairness, the question of if we do not have an equal number of games for all the teams and decisions are made based on percentages, that in a weird way, it is reasonable and possible that you having an outbreak helps you. It helps you in terms of percentages. What do you think about the fairness of that? And has baseball addressed that issue?
Tony, my youngest son is 8, and one of the great things that has happened during the pandemic is he has stopped whining about things not being fair. We have reached that point in his life where he finally is beginning to understand that when you whine about fairness, while you may be morally correct, while your point may be completely salient, there is nothing that I or your mom can do to make it better. And Rob Manfred is the evil godfather of Major League Baseball, is looking at these teams and saying, oh, well, we're in the middle of a pandemic, guys, and there is nothing that I can do beyond what I'm trying to do right now, which is put on a baseball season while traveling in the middle of a pandemic to make it feel better. And I listen, I wish there were a scenario in which everything were fair, but I got to say, Tony, having the Cardinals play 53 games in 44 days is not advantageous to them. Like, they are playing I think it's 11 yeah. doubleheaders over that span. They have two off days over a month and a half. Like, it's not fair to them. It's not fair to the Marlins. That they're getting anywhere close to playing 60 games is nuts to me and wrong. And I think there are moral issues about making him do that because of the likelihood of increase in injury. And because of what it does to the opponents as well, playing seven inning doubleheaders. And when you came into this season, Tony, you built your team to play nine inning games. So it's a disadvantage to some teams that don't have rosters constructed quite as well for that seven-inning games. There's all sorts of things around baseball this year that make it unfair for any number of teams, but the fact that they are playing right now in the middle of a pandemic and doing so relatively successfully,
yeah,
to me helps mitigate that unfairness because it beats, I suppose, the alternative.
There's going to be, down the road, the reckoning is going to be how many pitchers' careers are ended by what they're trying yep. to do in such a concentrated period of time, I guess, yep. with their eyes open. I'll get you out of here on this. It amazes me every year. Why are the Angels so bad every single year with what they've got? Why?
The most frustrating thing about it, Tony, is this would be if Michael Jordan never made the playoffs. Like, we would still appreciate Michael Jordan's greatness, but we all know that playoffs amplify excellence. And the fact that Mike Trout's playoff career through almost a decade to this point is going to consist of three losses to the Kansas City Royals. It's so frustrating. I mean, he's right now two of the 10 best hitters in the world, and that may be a high denominator there.
Him and Rendon.
Are with the Los Angeles yep. Angels. Yep. This particular team, it comes back to pitching. They stink. They stink. And they have wasted a career. And I hope that going forward they find some damn pitching, or they can bring somebody in who knows how to find some damn pitching. Because what they've done to Mike Trout, it really is the sporting equivalent of a shame.
Yeah, I won't even ask you about the Nats. I weep every single night. I watch these games, and I
Tony, just go back. Just go onto YouTube and watch video of Daniel Hudson throwing his glove, and it'll bring a smile to your face.
Swing and a miss. Yeah. Swing and a miss.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you so very much. Appreciate it.
If I may very quickly.
Yep.
Daniel Hudson, when I first met him, I think you know I wrote a book on him and spent like 4 years yep. with him. When I first met him, he was mainly a fastball and changeup pitcher. He did not have a slider. And to throw a swing and a miss slider to Michael Brantley, who is one of the great contact hitters in all of baseball, and have him wind up literally on bended knee to Hudson as he chucks his glove toward nothing. Like, it was the worst throw I've ever seen. It was like Bryce Harper throwing his helmet at Hunter Strickland was one of my favorite ends of a World Series of all time. Thank you for letting me go, Tony. Have a great day. I love you.
Jeff Passan, just wonderful. Just fantastic. Wonderful. We will come back with email and a jingle. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony Kornheiser Show.
Yeah. Sponsors like to get you in a compromising position. FedEx is gonna take their name down off your place. Now look here, then you're gonna have to make a big decision. You know you've been a toad.
football team, and this is now the Washington football team. It used to be a Sun, now it's the Washington football team. They were the Redskins since they were the Braves in the 1930s. Now the football team in D.C. is the Washington football team.
So good to hear Joe Arrow. It's just so good to hear Joe Arrow do that song, which is borrowed from John Mellencamp from a song called Authority Song in 1983. Lovely. That'll do it for us today. But before we get to the mailbag, let me just say that we're adding a little something to this month's sales contest. As you all know, first prize is Cadillac Eldorado. Anyone want to see second prize? Second prize, as Alec Baldwin says, is a set of steak knives. Third prize, you're fired. You get the picture. It's a great play, and it is a great movie. And it's, who's the guy who wrote it? Come on,
David
Tony.
Mamet. Is it David Mamet?
David Mamet, who lives in Vermont. It's just so great. Third prize. Third prize, you're fired. Thanks to our guests today, Brian Windhorst and Jeff Passan. Thanks to our sponsors, Simply Safe and Indochino. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review and give us the Bethesda Bagel read.
Oh, yes. We love Bethesda Bagels. You will
as well.
Yes,
we do. Yes.
Several locations around the D.C. area. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location nearest you. We go to the one on Bethesda Row. It's 4819 Bethesda Avenue. They're open every day from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. And the bagels, the bagel sandwiches, all of it is just fantastic. You'll love it.
Can you find it, Michael?
Friday morning.
Fantastic.
I've been going there for 25 years. I can find it.
From Jim Shelton in New Albany, Indiana. While flipping channels today, I noticed that starting at 1 at 7 p.m., Chatter on Books is on C-SPAN 2. Congratulations to Tori for getting that accomplished. The episode was about Will Haywood. I was so excited to see Tori Clark. But as a bonus, David Aldridge and Gene McManus were on the show. Also, Gene's sister Mary was there. So excited to see the faces of people I had just heard talk on your show. This is the part of the crew that I missed the day I was at Chatter. Thanks for all the entertainment over the years. And to John Hamilton, that's two. From Corey Ernst, I just had my David Aldridge moment. I was watching the 10 o'clock news this evening, and the top story was on students returning to the University of Michigan. As I am watching, one of the students they interviewed was a young lady named Sydney from Maryland. This was followed by an interview with her father, Gary, from Maryland. I knew immediately it was Super G. It did help that he had on This Mask Stinks, and the young son behind him wore a Nationals World Champions t-shirt. I told my wife, I know this guy. She looked at me and asked how, and I told her he's on my favorite podcast. She shook her head and muttered as she walked away, that doesn't mean you know him. I just offered a La Cheeserie and flipped to the Lakers game. From Ian Crandall in Quebec, in Bromont, Quebec, in Canada. I really should not call you Mr. Old Guy, as I am 58, but I would just like to say thank you for flying the Maple Leaf at the end of PTI. I always watch PTI right to the end just to see our Leaf. Now that they have announced the 2024 President's Cup at Royal Montreal, I would like to officially invite you. Cheers, be safe, and stay in the attic. Thank you, Ian. Maybe I'll send Michael to that. That would be great. Chip Robinson in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. In Monday's mailbag, you quoted some of your favorite song lyrics, but in the open, you dropped a line that could easily have also been song lyrics when you said, Mike Lyle was the name, got me a woman to call me, and I will call her back. I don't know that anything great will come of it, but I am so grateful for the connection. 10 more minutes of work, 3 chords and a hook, and you'd be halfway to a Rolling Stones hit. And by the way, I will call later this morning. Mike from Burke, Virginia. Regarding your conversation with Barry on Monday on the Nats, I think you need to work a little harder on the tone of your voice when you discuss Strasburg. I think you could squeeze a little more smugness and dismissiveness out of your voice when you discuss last year's World Series MVP. It's not quite nasty and arrogant enough. Michael, you say I'm much too hard on him.
You've always been too hard on him.
He's an orchid.
What else can he show you that he didn't do in 2019 in the playoffs?
Kristaps Porzingis is the Steven Strasburg of basketball at the moment. Tony, I haven't set foot in my office since March. My problem is I just can't remember if I left any food in the drawer in my desk. Sometimes I have nuts in a can or beef jerky, but what if I left something in there that really shouldn't go unsupervised for 6 months? Concerned about the smell, I am Tim Cree in Fort Collins, Colorado. From Matt Rousset in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. It was interesting to hear Pat Forty's daughter could swim with a cup of coffee on her head. But the littles are really dying to know, when she swims at the gym, does she fight with an old orange man about whether the door should be open? If only she swam at the gym that I was at, that I don't go to anymore. Luke, because it's a gym, you know what I'm saying? I go briefly, yeah. And with very few people in the building. Loop 48, Randolph, Massachusetts. Quick question. Do you remember the flavor names at Dairy Barn on Long Island? My wife is trying to remember the name of our dad's favorite from there. I'll take my answer offline. From Brandon Borzelli in Lebanon, New Jersey. A couple of songs related to rain. Purple Rain by Prince, which may have to do with love or acid rain or acid love or just acid. Okay, so it's a trip. Love Rain On Me by The Who, which is about rain despite the spelling, unless love is ruling over Tommy. And, of course, Rain In Blood by Slayer, which is about, well, it's loud. From Patrick Vicencio in Laurel, Maryland. How to Eat a Pizza? Have the littles look at Tony Manero, played by John Travolta in the opening scene of Saturday Night Fever. He is not eating one slice, but two New York-style pizzas. And this one, I hold you up as a paragon of civility and taste. When I'm not polishing my monocle, I often reach for my silk gloves and walking cane and sally forth to my local provisioners to sample the subtle delights that you spotlight on your audible cavalcade of whimsy. This brings me to the papadilla. How is it that it took you to this year, 2020, one-fifth of the way through the 21st century to discover and marvel over a calzone? A calzone, mind you, that has the crust cut off like a kindergarten PB&J. I mean, hey, eat what you want. But if I'm looking to cast a plate of something that Oscar Madison can throw against the wall and call garbage, I'm bringing the papadilla back for a second audition. Craving a quesadilla, all of a sudden I am Hampton Nature of Dallas, Texas. If you're out on a bike tonight, as always, do wear white.
Who's your favorite pitcher?
Max Scherzer.
What does Max Scherzer do?
Phoenix.
Who's your favorite batter?
Soto.
In